Good afternoon, Laurier. Welcome back to Radio Laurier News at 9. I'm your host, Rajni, and I'm here with Jeffrey. And today we'll bring you the stories from Ontario, Canada, as well as worldwide news. So stay tuned.
Hey, everyone.
Okay, so today we'll start off with some encouraging news from the Ontario COVID situation. So as of today, Tuesday, February 23rd, we have finally dropped below 1,000 cases. With 975 new infections logged today. And this is the first time in about a week that our case count has decreased to below 1,000. And previously it was 1,058 on Monday, 1,087 on Sunday, 1,228 on Saturday, and 1,150 on Saturday. So that makes our 7-day rolling average now 1,055, which is only slightly up from 1,034 a week ago.
Nice.
Unfortunately, we have had 12 more virus-related deaths, which brings our death toll to 6,884, and one of these individuals was a long-term care home resident.
Wow.
So, yeah, which is encouraging, but I think we could still do better. And as you all probably know, the stay-at-home orders, ended for the majority of the province this week, except for Peel Region and Toronto.
Yeah, wow. Honestly, I'm pretty happy with our reduction in cases. I was honestly not really expecting it.
Same.
To go this long, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully if we can get to summer, because I don't know this scientifically, but I just have a gut feeling that in the summer, something about the summer makes COVID less. That's probably not true, but that's how it was last summer. I don't know if that had anything to do with the weather.
Actually, I think it does have something to do with the weather, because I remember reading a few months ago that during colder months, the coldness in the air and the dryness of the air makes the viral particles stay in there longer. So they're airborne for longer, which means you can breathe them in and you're more likely to get sick even if you're outside. Whereas when you're when it's summer and it's all humid and stuff, the particles are heavier, I guess. So because they're weighed down by the water or something, so they sink to the ground. And you don't get to breathe them in as much.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so winter does actually have an effect on it. So that's why in winter they recommend you to wear a mask, even when you're outside, like just taking your daily walk.
See, yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Because
yeah.
The way I think about it is there's states in the U.S. like Florida, Georgia, Texas, that basically you can do whatever you want.
Yeah,
basically, you know what I'm saying, not like how it was before, but like it's probably the closest in America and Canada that it is to like real freedom.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that they didn't have a mask mandate, like it wasn't mandatory to wear a mask in indoor places?
As I was saying, I'm not too sure. I don't think there's a mask mandate. I think that's one of the freedoms. I think it's like probably optional. But even if there is a mask mandate in Texas, Georgia, and Florida, those states,
yeah,
the point is that everything's open as long as you're wearing a mask. So like you can go to clubs, you can go to
strip clubs,
you can
go
to NBA, you know what I'm saying? Like you can do like basically anything. And obviously their cases are bad and their death counts are bad.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear like, you don't see like catastrophic, you know what I'm saying? Like hospital meltdowns and whatnot.
Mm.
Like you're not really seeing that in the headlines.
Oh,
and
that doesn't always mean that it doesn't happen though.
That's true. That's true. But I'm pretty sure like even those are definitely probably the worst hit COVID states.
Yeah.
But regardless, even as bad as they are, they're still seemingly fine. Like people are still willing to go to the club. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
people aren't scared. And that just shows you that COVID's not affecting people as much as you'd assume. And finally, I'll just tie up my whole little thing. My point is, those are warm.
Yeah, they're warmer than like New York, you know?
Yeah, so maybe that has something, maybe not. That's just sort of a little opinion, unscientific student Jeffrey opinion. I'm sure listeners are used to my random rants, but that's what makes the show different, you know? we're just some kids giving you our opinions with facts mostly, but occasionally just, you know. Anyways.
So speaking of our recent exit from lockdown, one of the three regions that was actually the most affected by COVID was York region. So it was York, Peel, and Toronto. But they still allowed York to open this week. So what do you think of that, Jeffrey? Do you think that was a smart move? Or do you think that could just create, like, even worse problems for us eventually?
I'm so torn about all of this because personally, just because I live alone or, like, I live with roommates my age, like, I have no fear of COVID.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't – honestly, it doesn't really affect me in a negative way other than, like, forcing me to be inside all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely lucky and privileged for that to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I feel like there's a lot of people like that. Like, the vast majority of people are feeling like that. Because mm-hmm. if you look at the numbers, like, there's what? I think there's 100 million COVID cases, something like that, worldwide.
Wow.
Let me just really quickly double check that worldwide. I think there's 100,000, like, 100 million. Yeah, 112 million COVID cases.
Wow.
That's a lot. That is not even a fraction of, like, the whole world population.
Yeah, that's a tiny percentage of the world population. A
tiny percentage for this to have been going on for almost a year now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So my kind of opinion is at this point, we're rolling in the vaccines. People are getting how to live in this. So we need to stop with these lockdowns. Because, yeah, the lockdown definitely obviously did something. Either it was the lockdown or the vaccines. I'm not sure why the cases are dropping so much.
I think it was the lockdown because Canada hasn't given that many vaccines.
Like, yeah, it must have been the lockdown. So obviously yeah. they do have some good value.
Yeah.
But I mean, at this point, how many businesses have to fail for us to save, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
10 people, you know what I'm saying? Because it's a morally hard thing to talk about.
The thing is that although lots of people who like live alone would not really be affected by it, there's so many more people who are just like affected by it whether they want to or not, because like yeah. if you need to go grocery shopping, right? Like, you need to ride the bus, you need to take yeah. Uber. Like yeah. all those people may not be in the same position as us, which is why I think like lockdowns would help to some extent. But at the same time, it's like the people who own those businesses, especially like small businesses like restaurants or like smaller shops, they have families that they need to take care of too. So it's exactly. like, where do you draw the line for like what's acceptable? And then another thing that people were questioning was like, why would you allow a big store like Walmart to be open when more people can be packed in there and it's harder to monitor instead of like a small local store where you could easily watch to see that only 5 people were inside at one time? You know what yeah. I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree. Honestly, just so we can wrap up this little discussion with my like final opinion on this, I'd say as long as the cases are below 1,500, there should be no lockdown. As long mm-hmm. as the cases are above 1,500 a day, there should be a lockdown.
Yeah.
Or maybe even 2,000. Like,
I think that's reasonable.
Because honestly, like, there's no way we're just going to lock down and it's just going to go away completely. Like, the way we're going to fight this is going to be gradual. Honestly, probably over the next 2 years, I'd say, before it's really, like, we're really have it under control.
Yeah. Because I think that if you're going to lock down, you might as well just do the whole thing, like, for 1 month or something, just strictly nothing is open, you know? Like, you can't be half locked down, half, like, open. It has to be 100%, like, everything is closed, and that's the only way that it will actually make, like, a huge impact. Because I think that's what they did in Australia and New Zealand. They just did, like, a point-blank period lockdown for a month, and then everything yeah. started to go down after that. And it was easier to maintain because they've made up their mind and they did it. And people knew like when it was going to end. It's not like this half-ass, oh, lockdown for 2 weeks, then another 2 weeks, then another 2 weeks, you know? Like what we've been doing in Ontario.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, no, like, I agree with you. The only thing is I know it's impossible for that to ever happen because people just wouldn't allow it.
Yeah, like in Canada, like, people would not agree to that.
Yeah. In first world, like, capitalist-based countries, people always are individuals in their thinking. So I just don't think that would ever work. But I do agree that's obviously the only way you could completely eliminate it.
Yeah. At least if you're going to take a lockdown perspective to it, I would think that if you're going to lock down, you may as well just do it, make it very clearly defined, and then make sure that like nothing can happen in that lockdown, like literally nothing. Yeah. But at least the trade-off is that at least people know when it's going to end. So they're not just in a perpetual state of like, oh no, when will lockdown end? Like, is it another 2 weeks? Is it another month?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. But honestly, Rajni, let's move on.
Yeah, sure.
COVID is a depressing.
I know.
So let's move on. This is a little, I have a little very quick subject. I don't know if you remember on our show, I think you're the one who mentioned it probably like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
About cannabis gummies that are being sold.
Yeah, that they're being labeled as like regular candies and kids are eating them. Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw, but in Markham, for those who don't know, it's like a city like right next to Toronto, basically. A convenience store just got raided, and the owner's got charged for selling those exact like cannabis gummies to Yeah, and they had like $10,000 worth of like illegal cannabis products they were just selling to like all these kids.
Whoa. So they knew it was actual cannabis. It wasn't like a mix up.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, they're honestly, there's not too much details right now on the case, but I would assume that the store owners are probably selling to like 14 to like 16, you know, like high school kids.
Yeah. So they didn't ask for ID or anything.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I think we all have been to a convenience store where they just don't ID you, or they'll just give you stuff they shouldn't even have.
Yeah.
Especially in high school, like, that was, especially, like, for me, I lived in Toronto, there was a lot of convenience stores that kind of did that, but not with, like, edibles that were packaged to look, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could give that to your little brother, and then God knows what's going to happen, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I wonder if it's just something about like the GTA, because my friend, she's from Brampton, and she says when she's in Toronto and those places, no one ever asks her for ID in the bar or the club or whatever. But every time she's in Waterloo, she gets carded.
Yeah.
So it's probably like in bigger cities, they don't have, I don't know, I guess they don't care that much, or they don't suspect that as many people will do like underage drugs.
Yeah, I mean, the way I think of it is, like, in a city like Toronto, where there's probably, like, what, maybe, like, 5,000 convenience stores?
Yeah.
Maybe 400 of those do illegal activity, and there's no one's going to check all 400, you know what I'm saying? So, like, some will get caught, most won't.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, it's definitely not a good thing to be doing that, but I think the worst-case scenario by selling cannabis products to, like, minors is that, like, a little kid will get like sick.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's really, honestly, this was more kind of funny to me than anything else. It's cannabis, it's weed, it's whatever. Like, it's not good for minors, but it's also not like destructive or addictive or anything. You know?
I think it depends on the age of the kid who consumes it. Because regular consumption of cannabis, if you're under 25, I think, can actually really badly affect your brain development. And kids who are like really young can get severely ill from it. I think the one that I was talking about, the kid ate his grandpa's like therapeutic cannabis products, and he almost died. I think he can't remember if he had a seizure or something, but he was in a very serious condition and he nearly died. But I think he was under 10.
Yeah, see, that's my point. Like, if they're under 14, like,
that's
terrible. If they're 14 to 18, like, let's be honest, everyone, not they everyone, a lot of people are doing,
they shouldn't be using it, but I don't think the effect, if they use it like once in a while, I don't think it would be that terrible.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like, I would equate it to like teenage drinking.
Yeah, like personally, I know a lot of people who I went to school with that started doing cannabis at 14, and they're fine, you know what I'm saying? They're in school, they're doing their degrees, they're getting good grades, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I know a lot more people that have been doing that and been fine than people that have been doing that and aren't fine. But regardless, let's move on from the weed gummies to some more substantial news. So as you viewers or listeners, I suppose, probably know, the last two or three shows we've been talking about Myanmar and the coup, which the whole world is kind of watching, where essentially the military kind of retook power. They had been in power for, I think it was 3 or 4 decades, since like the 60s. So, yeah, they did a coup. So there's a little update on that story. So there's been essentially been protests every day since the coup. Like, thousands of people have been taken to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And, they've been taken to the streets, shutting down businesses. Even, international chains like McDonald's and stuff were shut down in the last couple of days of the protests, which just shows you how, like, powerful this is.
Yeah.
So crowds assembled in Yangon. Oh, I'm going to brutalize this name. I'm so sorry. Naypyidaw. And Mandalay, sorry guys, very bad pronunciation, please allow me. And elsewhere, yeah, there's crowds assembled in those major cities and basically across the country. And this is basically because a couple days ago, several protests were actually killed. Protesters were killed by the...
Yeah, the police opened fire on them.
Yeah, they were literally opened fire on live ammunition on crowds of
protesters. Peacefully protesting.
Exactly. So that just sparked even larger protests, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about this is the protests appear to be, like, fully peaceful, or not, like, almost fully peaceful. And for protests of that size, that's not generally...
That's hard to do.
Yeah, it's hard to do, having thousands of people passionate, angry, and
mm-hmm.
be peaceful.
And still, yeah.
And I saw... add a little more context. So yesterday, the people were calling the protest the 5-2s revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it that because it's a reference to the date of yesterday, which was 22/2/2021. So there's 5-2s in that date.
Oh.
And they're comparing that date to the 8th of August, 1988,
mm-hmm.
where democracy demonstrations challenged the military, but were brutally crushed by the army.
I see. So that would be the 4-8s, and this is the 5-2s.
Yeah. The reason I'm not so sure the significance, other than the ties between the 80s one and the one yesterday, but
mm-hmm.
regardless. And just to final my little rant or monologue, I saw a very interesting quote by a Burmese citizen or a citizen of Myanmar.
Mm-hmm.
And he essentially said that the military strategy right now is they're trying to get the people to attack them.
Oh, wow. So they can have an excuse to brutalize them more.
Yeah. Basically, if the people start attacking the military, it's a civil war. And if it's a civil war, NATO and the UN can't get involved, right?
Oh, wow.
So if you continue doing it peacefully and Myanmar continues showing violence to the protesters, eventually, like, whatever, UN peacekeeping forces, NATO, other countries. Well,
so if... say that again. Is that if the military continues to brutalize the citizens, then UN can get involved as long as the citizens don't retaliate?
Yeah, exactly. As long as it's peaceful. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Eventually, the international community is going to get involved.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting time for the people of Myanmar.
Yeah.
And I have one more very interesting story, actually. Very, very interesting. So just to give a quick backstory, Rajni, have you heard of the country of Malta?
Yeah.
It's a very low-key, small island nation in the Mediterranean that I feel like a lot of people don't know about because it's mm-hmm. literally a tiny island. But basically, this island is, like, super, or was, probably still is, super corrupt, like, from the political level.
Oh, really?
Super duper corrupt. And there was this one Maltese journalist named Daphne Caruana Galizia.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, like, an international icon because she was, like, a blogger. And mm-hmm. all she did was just attack the Maltese government and attack politicians and expose them.
Yeah.
She was involved in the 2016 Panama WikiLeaks.
Oh.
So she's kind of like an informant, but the good kind of informant, you know what I'm saying? An investigative
mm-hmm.
journalist.
Mm-hmm.
So she was getting really into it, and she was like going after everyone in the Maltese government, like personally attacking them, like saying like the prime minister looked like a beluga whale. She said that. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like savage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, not obviously, but sadly, she was assassinated.
Oh my God.
Yeah, in 2017, she was killed in a car bombing.
Wow.
Which everyone obviously knew something about it had to do with the Maltese government.
Mm-hmm.
And literally 2 months after the bombing, Vincent Muscats and two other men were arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And the prime minister of Malta is Joseph Muscat. They're not even related. They just have the same last name.
Oh.
But they are related in the sense that, like, they were kind of all part of the same tree. So, like, it's assumed that the prime minister knew what was happening. So he resigned. He resigned shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, my point in all this was that the man I said, Vincent Muscat, who got arrested, mm-hmm. he just pled guilty today
mm-hmm.
to murder, and he's probably going to do life, which is actually a great thing for Malta. It just shows you that they're kind of cracking down on the corruption.
Yeah.
Because in other countries, that probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that's true. It's encouraging at least to see that.
Yeah, because that was just very unfortunate because she was a really, like, inspirational journalist, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
she was really passionate. She was had no fear. She survived like 2 or 3 previous assassinations.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So mm-hmm. I have a question. Was Malta one of those places that people would have offshore bank accounts to, like, reduce their tax and all that?
So basically, I didn't do too much research because I just wanted to touch on this topic kind of quickly, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, basically Malta, like, people have offshore bank accounts in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, a lot of the Malta elite are involved with, like, Dubai, have companies in Dubai, and they're involved with the Americans, and they're just kind of very involved in the international community for such a small island.
Yeah.
There's billionaires on that island. How are you a billionaire of a country of 300,000? You know what I'm saying? That just shows you something's off, and that's kind of why, like, Daphne, the journalist, was sort of so aggressive in her attacks against the government
mm-hmm.
because the government was just so obviously corrupt and just so backwards.
Yeah, of course.
I think because Malta, I don't think it's a wealthy country. I think there's a lot of poverty in Malta.
Mm-hmm.
And the elites are out here, like, owning companies in Dubai, having private ships, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, lots of inequality.
Yeah, there's lots of inequality. It's really messy, or it was. Mm-hmm. I guess I haven't been paying attention outside of this specific story.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, the reason I asked was because I actually watched a movie this weekend about the Panama Papers incident. It's called Laundromat.
It's
hilarious. It's a funny movie, but it's also very informative. Like, it's kind of based on the real events.
Yeah.
And then they build, like, a whole web of stories of people who are, like, connected to that incident. It's really interesting. You should watch it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out because things like that, like the Panama leaks, WikiLeaks in 2009, Edward Snowden's role,
yeah,
all that stuff. The fact that people are prosecuting these people for whistleblowing,
mm-hmm.
even though they're fully exposing, like, everything wrong,
yeah,
it just shows, you know what I'm saying, like,
how corrupt everything is.
People need to, like, people who loved Obama. And mm-hmm. I don't have too much against Obama. Like, I don't really have too much of an opinion, but he was the one who decided to prosecute Edward Snowden and what's his name, Julian Assange. I think it was both of them, but it was definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
His government's the one that decided to prosecute them under the U.S. Espionage Act, which hadn't been enacted, I'm pretty sure, in like 60 years or something crazy like that.
Wow, okay.
So was it
that they were giving U.S. information to Russia or something? Is that why they were able to do that act?
No, essentially, like, what they were doing was they were just leaking U.S., like, confidential documents.
Oh, okay.
To the public.
Yeah.
And just because they're confidential and these people were hacking, that's where the charges come.
Yeah.
And fair enough, but, like, those documents really changed the world, you know what I'm saying? Like, they...
Yeah.
Owes a lot, so
because it's kind of like they're exposing stuff that needs to be exposed,
you know
if they do it in the wrong way. Like, at the end of the day, I feel like that information makes people more informed to do better.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know, it's just It's an interesting topic. It's a very interesting topic. But unless you have anything else, Rajni, I think we're coming to time.
Yeah.
More or less.
I'm good. That's all my stories for today.
So thank you so much, everybody, for listening, for bearing with our potential technical difficulties and my ranting. Thank you guys so much. Please tune in next Wednesday at noon. And yeah, have a great week. Take care.
See you next week, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.